and welcome to another episode of my podcast, Get Creepy With Me. So I figured I would just do like another urban legend discussion this week. This one takes place in Fairfax County, Virginia. This legend is called The Legend of the Bunny Man. So what struck me about this legend was that where it takes place, I mean, I have family that live in that area, so I was like, I need to go and check this out when I'm down there visiting my family. It was like my dad and my brother and me that like went and actually investigated this legend well, I guess I should tell you the full story. So basically, the legend of this bunny man takes place mostly around this bridge that's located in this county. Like, I found the street and everything, and we drove under this bridge, parked the car, I got out, it was like really dark, and I just wanted to like just be there and like experience the place. So as far as I know, this legend, at least the one in Virginia, has been around for over 30 years. Now, there were reports of this bunny man also in like Maryland and Washington, D.C., and he started popping up in these like secluded locations. So there's real reports of this guy going around in like this bunny suit, and he was armed with an axe, and he would be like threatening kids around these neighborhoods and vandalizing property. Apparently this was taking place in like the 80s, and then eventually the story became very dark. This bunny man was accused of being a murderer. So again, I talked about how I went to this bridge. They call it the Bunny Man Bridge, and it's in Fairfax Station, Virginia. Well, near it. It's hard to explain. I don't even know how we found it. But yeah, it is like this railroad overpass. And I guess a lot of people would like go there and have parties and stuff. It was like a big area for like just like high school kids, or whoever went and partied there. I don't know if that still happens nowadays. I mean, I don't, my family, like, they don't live like right next to this thing, so they can't really tell me if this still happens or not. But yeah, I guess like these people would like go and have these parties there, and the bunny man would show up at these parties and kind of like scare them, like, you know, teenagers. And you know, he was probably like a pedophile or something, I don't know. So I've been going off this article of somebody who grew up in that area and is very familiar with this legend. So they go back to 1992. I just want to read their knowledge of this story and this legend. They said, "After graduating from high school, I accepted a position with the Fairfax County Public Library, eventually becoming an information specialist in the Virginia room. In the year 1992, there was one day when a very well-spoken young lady came into the Virginia room with a question. She told me that she heard about two children being murdered near this bridge by this guy who was like a local hermit. I guess the kids trespassed onto his property and he followed them and murdered them." What is that? Oh, that just made me think of a movie. What's that movie where that guy has, like, severe PTSD and he, like, kills those teenagers for, like, going into his house? I literally just Googled movie about blind guy who kills kids in his house. I think there's a second one, but I never saw the second one. But Don't Breathe. I just remember that gross scene, though, where he had, like, his, like, I can't even say it. You know what? I'm not even going to say what he tried, like, injecting into this girl's vagina. You know, I'm just going to stop there. We'll stop there. This is going to have to be an explicit episode again. Yeah, it was like, I'm not even going to say it. I'm just going to move on. Don't trespass onto an old man's property because you're going to get fucked up somehow. That's what I learned from the movie Don't Breathe. So anyways, the relation to the murders in the bridge, I think that's what I was talking about. So after this guy killed these two kids, he took them to the bridge and he left their bodies hanging from the bridge. And so that's the story of this bridge in Virginia. And same one I went to. And I was looking at it, I was like, I could see someone being able to do that just the way there's like the railing above it. It is so eerie. Now, this lady didn't have any names about these kids. I forgot I was reading this in the perspective of this person. Okay, so... She had no names for the children and only a vague idea of a time frame. The whole story seemed a little fantastic, but the thing that really bothered me was the guy was supposed to be an escaped inmate dressed in a bunny suit. At this point, even though the story had evolved a bit, I recognized the tale from my own youth. We were unable to confirm any of the elements of the story as she or I had first heard it. I put it down in my mind as a story fabricated to scare children. I likely would have forgotten about the Bunny Man again if the question didn't begin coming on a regular basis. The Bunny Man has actually begun appearing in print in recent years, having been mentioned in several high school newspapers and more recently on the internet. Various internet versions have carried the story to new heights. In 1904, there were these inmates being transferred from an insane asylum, and they escaped while they were going to this place called the Lorton Prison. So one of the escapees, Douglas C. Griffin, killed the other one, Marcus Walster, and then eventually he became known as the Bunny Man because the version I heard was that, like, Douglas was also killing, like, these bunnies in the woods. When the cops were looking for him, they found, like, these rabbits that were, like, decapitated or something. But these guys, their names aren't on any of the court records in Fairfax County. And I guess the library where they're saying you can find all this doesn't even exist. But yeah, I guess on that TV show, Scariest Places on Earth, they like went to this bridge. And so that's kind of cool. Because I used to watch that show. I love that show. That was a good show. And I guess they went there and I went there. So it's cool. But again, it's kind of easy for us to like look at that as like, well, it's a fictional story and we can dismiss it as fiction. But there's still this question of why did this legend develop and who is it really based off of? And there's like different versions of it in that like Fairfax County area expanding to like DC, Maryland, and again, parts of Virginia. So the overall thoughts are that what inspired this legend would be some type of like actual crime. So we look a little bit deeper into that. I'm going back to my article. Did the Bunny Man exist, and was he a murderer? So the aspect of the story which gets the most attention are the alleged murders. So I guess the question is, like, what crimes might have been committed that sort of inspired this legend? I guess if you look at historical crimes in Fairfax County, it can be really hard to find something that you could link to that. Police records aren't available for casual review either. I mean, for the most part, like, you're not going to get court records and police records and, you know, all that information like in your local library, and, you know, half the stuff like you're not going to find out on the internet either. But I guess a lot, like, if you look for these records, they're like sorted by the names of people involved and not really like the location or the type of crime. But I guess at the Fairfax County Public Library, there's this historical newspaper index. So there's like some stories there that you can find where people are like, maybe this was where the legend came from. At the Fairfax County Public Library, there's a guy named Malcolm Richardson and a woman named Barbara Welch, and they've worked for like 10 years to come up with an index for the local Fairfax County newspapers, so to kind of make it easy to just sort through if you want to like find these stories. I guess there's a whole bunch of murders and killings that were reported in the local press between 1872 through 1973. Now, even though Fairfax County was this rural farming community until sometime in the 20th century, there were 550 individual mentions of killings during those years. So there's sort of these run-of-the-mill domestic murders that you can sort through. So this guy that was researching this, he said he was looking for like multiple murders in those involving children. So which both of which were very rare, like you're not going to find like multiple, like I don't know, of those 550 murders that they found in the records, they were like, okay, we'll narrow it down a little bit further to, again, like kids getting killed or like more than one person getting killed. And so anyways, there's this list that this person who researched this like came up with. These are actual murders that took place in Fairfax County. Actual names, we have the month, the day, and like the manner of the murder. I'll go through some of them because again, this is kind of interesting if you're looking at like where might this legend have started. Okay, so number one is Francis and June Hollaber. This was in February of 1949. Like I said, this is an actual documented murder in the area that may have inspired the legend. So here's what happened. So in 1949, Fairfax was a growing community and people were shocked to hear about these murders. So it was 37-year-old Frances Hollaber and her 8-month-old daughter. Mrs. Hollaber and her daughter drove to Fairfax County in the company of her estranged husband, Charles. All were residents of the District of Columbia. Charles Hollaber later told police that they had come to see the new lodge at a nudist colony to which Mr. Hollaber belonged. Okay, already a little odd. Upon leaving the lodge, the car became stuck in some mud, and the couple got into this argument, and then Mrs. Hollaber took the child, walked away from her husband, never returned. So then Charles spent the night in the car. He got a ride back home the next day. Now, then he returned with his brother-in-law and a friend to get the car, but there was no evidence of his family. Well, I mean, he walked away and went home anyway. Like, so I guess the police were finally called, and then there was this search that went on. It was about 5 p.m. on, I don't know what day this was, but, I guess this was in the same day. So the searchers were about to like give up for the night, and then there was a detective that saw on the ground where they were standing, it was like really soft. So I guess both this mother and daughter were found in this shallow grave next to the lodge, less than 200 yards from where Charles Hollaber's car had been stuck. So, I mean, who do you think killed this woman and her child? I think Charles is looking a little sus. So Frances Hollaber had been beaten and then shot once in the head and once in the heart. And then the little girl was buried alive. So the local community was shocked, of course, by this, the brutal character of this crime, especially when the investigation identified Charles Hollaber as the prime suspect. He later confessed to the investigators that he had planned this murder for 3 weeks, and he didn't intend to report the disappearance of his wife, but he changed his plan when his car got stuck in the mud. So the case came to trial on January 16th of 1950 after hearing 4 days of testimony, the jury returned a verdict of guilty, and Holober was sentenced to die in the electric chair. And of course, his attorney was trying to appeal. But I guess eventually it was overturned. So yeah, the conviction was overturned because they were saying the jury failed to give proper consideration to the plea of insanity. Yeah, Charles Francis Holober was committed to the Western State Mental Hospital of Marion, Virginia, and he was deemed to be insane. But people are saying that could be part of where this legend comes from. I mean, there's no tie to like a bunny in that story, but there's one of your murders. Then there's Minnie, Loretta, and Catherine Ridgway. This was in March of 1927. So these murders, again, like the others, really shocked Fairfax. I don't know why we went back in time. Yeah, we were in 1949, but now, yeah, we're back in 1927. But anyways, this was in March 4th, 1927. So this guy, where do I begin? So I guess Minnie and her two daughters, Loretta and Catherine, were brutally attacked. And this was on Telegraph Road in Alexandria. Now, sometime in the morning on March 4th, 1927, this man, later identified as Louis Borsig, he called the house and he was like, I don't know if he was stalking this family or what, but like he found out that the dad wasn't home. And so he broke in, attacked and beat Minnie into unconsciousness, and then likewise bludgeoned her daughters to death. Then he stole money from the home and he left. Now the crime was discovered by a neighbor who heard like moans coming from inside the house. All three victims were taken to Alexandria Hospital, but Loretta was dead. Catherine actually lived. Oh, okay. I thought they like were bludgeoned to death. So Loretta was bludgeoned to death, but Catherine lived. She lived another 8 days and then succumbed to her injuries. Minnie recovered and was able to identify the assailant, who was known to the Ridgeways. So Borsig was arrested at his home. He was transferred to the jail in Winchester for whatever time frame that was. But he was executed for the murders on July 7th of 1927, just 3 months after he killed them. So maybe that's where our Bunny Man story comes from. Here's another one, Eva Roy, August of 1918, going back even further. So again, these are real documented murders. Peter Roy was a Danish immigrant who came to Fairfax from Minnesota in 1912. In November of that year, he purchased 2 parcels of land near the current intersection of Old Keene Mill Road and Sindenstricker Road. Roy was a widower, he was a prosperous farmer, and an active member of the church in that area. It was the Lee Chapel Methodist Church. With him lived his eldest daughter, Carolyn, her husband, William, and his younger daughter, Eva. So on the morning of August 4th, 1918, Eva, who was 14 at this time, left her home around 9 o'clock in the morning. She was just going to like where they kept their cows. So she was, you know, nearby, but I guess she failed to return home that evening. And so her father began a search. The neighbors all came to help, but it was like 24 hours later, her body was found tied to a tree in the woods near the old Hans house, it's called. And she was wearing an apron. Her strings were tied around her throat. The county coroner at the time, Dr. W.I. Roby, concluded that she had been brutally assaulted before she was strangled to death. So a coroner's jury was appointed and quickly concluded that she came to her death at the hands of some unknown person, but indications pointed to Lou Hall as a probable perpetrator of the crime. So Hall was a 33-year-old woodcutter who lived about half a mile from the scene of the crime, and he was seen in the woods near the time of this girl's disappearance. Now, the case could not be easily solved, but the suspects were soon identified and eventually eliminated. So I guess another guy, William Wooster, was his name. So he was arrested for assaulting a, quote, colored girl. And he was recently released from an insane asylum, but I guess he was, like, nowhere near the scene of this girl's murder, so they kind of ruled him out. Then there was a suspect who was a soldier that, like, ran away from Camp A.A. Humphreys, now Fort Belvoir. He was found in, like, Charlottesville, Virginia. He had, like, scratches on his face, his hands. He was wearing freshly washed clothes, and I guess he had no memory of the events before he, like, left this camp. But they're saying, like, maybe he went and killed this girl. Okay, so I guess fingers were pointing to Ben Rubin, who was an escaped inmate from this prison. He was serving a 3-year sentence for housebreaking. He was arrested by Washington, D.C. police on September 19th for assaulting a little girl while on the way to the police station. He confessed to Eva's murder. He claimed he met Eva, who was looking after her father's cows. He asked her for food, and in conversation with her, he told her he was an ex-convict, and then she declared she would turn him up, and then he became excited and choked her. I don't know about you, but that's not the way that I handle my excitement. The Washington authorities were unconvinced by Ruben's story. They wanted to try him for assault and theft and then turn him over to the Virginia courts. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. They took Ruben back to the scene of the crime, apparently, because they were looking for where Eva's body was. But I guess, like, whenever they went back to the scene and everything, like, Ruben denied killing Eva. He claimed that the presence of the girl's father, like, scared him, and so he kind of decided to, like, take back his confession and change his story. But anyways, his motive for confessing was revealed a few weeks later when on October 6th, a few weeks later when he escaped from jail in Fairfax. He was arrested 2 days later while he was attempting to buy a pistol and admitted that he came up with that story because he wanted to be transferred to Fairfax. So I guess that's why he, like, kind of lied and was like, I did it, I killed her. Because he thought that he could escape from there more easily. I guess that kind of makes sense. But that's also really stupid. So Lou Hall was finally tried for the murder of Eva in Fairfax County Court. So I guess he was, like, found guilty in the first trial, but then he had another trial and he was found not guilty. And Peter Roy, the other suspect, died before they could find out the truth. So Eva's murderer was never, like, really found. So, I don't know, if you read through those, like, documented murders, those were kind of the three. They were like, okay, maybe, like, these stories had something to do with this legend. So, I mean, it's not really likely that these people are candidates for the Bunny Man, but they're kind of, like, gruesome murderers. In November of 2000, the Washington Post ran an article highlighting an interesting collection called the Maryland Folklore Archive from the 1950s through circa 1990. And so students at three Maryland universities collected, researched, and transcribed numerous local legends. This material had finally come to rest in the holdings of the University of Maryland. University of Maryland student Patricia Johnson submitted a paper titled The Bunny Man, and she went like hard into this legend. She was like, the tale meets all the qualifications of an urban belief tale. Specifically, it takes place in an urban setting, existed for a while, and appeared in print as truth. So I guess she actually found that there's like 54 different variations of the story. 14 different geographic locations are mentioned. 18 involve the bunny man chasing or frightening people, usually children, with a hatchet or an axe. 14 versions tell of attacks on cars. I heard that one before I went to the bridge, and I was like worried about my dad and my brother parking off to the side in the car. Like, they left the lights on, but I was like, oh no, they're in their car. Like, something's gonna happen to them, and I'm just like out here walking around by myself. Nothing happened to them. We all survived that night. I will talk a little bit more about my experience in a second. So 9 versions claim that he attacked a couple that was like parked in the car, probably like doing whatever couples do in cars. 5 versions accuse him of vandalism in like homes or buildings. Only 3 versions mention an actual murder, but based on the widespread geographic locations and the significant variations, this bunny man probably didn't exist. So some very good research from a studious college student. But I guess there's another story that like could make this true. Like in Halloween of 1970, there was a story about this man who was wearing a bunny suit like on Halloween. And I guess like the police were looking for him because he likes wearing these white rabbit suits in throwing hatchets through people's car windows. An Air Force Academy cadet, Robert Bennett, told police that it was like right after midnight when he was there with his fiance. They were like sitting in the car, like on this road, and this guy that was like dressed in a white suit with long bunny ears ran from the nearby bushes and shouted, "You're on private property. I have your tag number." And then I guess he threw like this wooden handled hatchet through the right front car window. So as soon as this guy threw the hatchet, he like skipped off like a bunny, I guess, into the night. That's what police said. That's what this guy said. Bennett and his fiance weren't injured, but I guess that was a true story of something weird that happened on Halloween night. But then there was like this guy wearing a furry rabbit suit. I don't know what day this was. I think it was after Halloween on Guinea Road in Fairfax County. I guess it was like after, like a few days after. And he was like, he had an axe and he was like chopping this support roof on a new house. Then there was a guy that threw a hatchet through a closed window of a car. Oh no, that was the same one. So there's this private security guard, Paul Phillips, who worked for a construction company, and he saw this dude in like a rabbit suit standing on the front porch of this new unoccupied house. So probably the same one that was like chopping away at the roof or whatever. I guess he was like standing on the front porch. And so Phillips goes over to him and he's like, "What are you doing?" And the bunny man said, like, "All you people do is trespass around here." And he like started like chopping at something on the porch. And he said, "If you don't get out of here, I'm going to bust you on the head." So Phillips was like, "Fuck this. I'm just going to go to my car." And then he went and grabbed his gun. But this rabbit that was carrying this axe just like ran into the woods. The security guard said the man was about 5'8", 160 pounds, and appears to be in his early 20s at whatever time this was. So that's like 2 documented, like actual documented appearances of like some dude just doing like weird things in a rabbit suit. So I don't know. It's like there's so many different stories of this bunny man nobody really knows like where exactly it came from or like what started it. They have like an investigation report for that dude that got that was with his fiance and like had the axe thrown through their car. I guess there's not a whole lot of information you can access. It was just misdemeanor offenses. Yeah, so like on October 31st, this was at 10:30 p.m. So this is in a Washington Post article basically saying, so I guess six officers responded to a call on 5307 Guinea Road for a subject dressed as a rabbit with an axe. So the officers didn't find a rabbit man. Then they turned it over to an investigator who began visiting construction offices on the 31st. I guess he found no rabbits, but he received a call after his visit from someone who worked at Kings Park West. The caller claimed to have just received a call from someone identifying himself as the Axeman. The Axeman allegedly said, "Mr. It's just blank. It doesn't say what the name is, but have you been messing up my property by dumping tree stumps, limbs, and brush and other things on the property?" So the Axeman stated, "You can make everything right by meeting me tonight and talking about the situation." The representative from Kings Park West stated that the caller sounded to be like a white male, probably in his late teens or early 20s. So police set up a stakeout, like looking for this guy, but the Axeman never showed up. On November 4th of that year, the investigator that was looking into this received a call from a resident of the area. Her son claimed to know the identity of the bunny man. She stated some of the neighborhood children who have seen or been with the bunny man described him as an older teenager. So I don't know. We'll never know the true identity of this bunny man, but there's a lot of stories of, actual accounts, actual reports of some weird things happening, but then also these actual murders that could have inspired some type of legend about a serial killer wearing a bunny mask. I just remember from like my experience, we found this bridge. It was me and my dad and my brother. I just remember like the bridge was kind of creepy. You would look up like on the bridge and like you'd almost think that like you see someone standing up there. It was really like dark and I thought I was seeing like these shadows and stuff. Tricks of the eye, I'm sure, but I don't know. I mean, apparently people would go there and party, so it could just be people partying there. The night I went, it was just kind of creepy. It was like a night in fall. And like you heard movement all around you. Like, this is so weird to say. It sounded like the trees were moving, like it sounded like leaves were moving, but like when I looked, like there wasn't really any wind, but like it sounded like just things were moving like in the leaves. I can't really explain it. Like, yeah, I'm not saying it's like the bunny man was at this bridge watching me. I just think like I can see why like people might say that they see like weird stuff around there. So I can see kind of like where these legends would come from. Anyway, that's my rambling of the Bunny Man legend. That's all that I'm gonna have for you guys for this week. And I will, actually, I lied. I might have another episode out this week. I don't know. I don't know. I was going to try to put out like two episodes this week, so stay tuned. Anyways, I'll see you guys on my next episode. Thanks again for listening. Bye.